Wake up with the news and information you can trust. Starting your day the right way with the Andy Griffin Show. This is News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU.
Good morning. This is the Andy Griffin Show 908 on KDXU. Mello's going to join me shortly, but I do have right now on the phone Dominic from the Doo-Wop Project. Now, Dominic, everybody's like, who and what? Tell us about the Doo-Wop Project, man.
Hey, how you doing? Dominic Melfi here from the Doo-Wop Project. We're performing at the Tuyacon Amphitheater November 14th.
Yeah.
And we sing classic doo-wop, and we take some modern songs and arrange them into doo-wop songs, and we call that doo-wopifying. And we're
like
five guys from Broadway, Jersey Boys, Motown the Musical, Beautiful, the Carole King Story, and we formed this kind of super doo-wop group. We travel around the country.
Okay, now I want to get a little sneak preview. I'm not going to ask you to sing, but what are some of the songs that you doo-wopify, some of the more modern songs?
I'm Yours, Michael Jackson's The Way You Make Me Feel, Amy Winehouse's Valerie, do some Maroon 5. Yeah, but we mostly sing classic doo-wop, like I Wonder Why, Dion and the Belmonts, I Only Have Eyes for You, The Flamingos, but also, of course, all the Frankie Valli hits. Sherry, Big Girls, Walk Like a Man, Begging. It's really fun.
I love it. How would you describe doo-wop to somebody who maybe had, I mean, most of my audience here are folks that are older, and we know exactly what you're talking about, but I'm sure there's a few people out there going, now, what exactly is a doo-wop? What does that refer to? How would you explain that to someone?
Well, it's not barbershop quartet, even though barbershop quartet is great and is close harmony singing. It's more like street corner singing, and it was developed in the inner cities by African Americans and Italian Americans, Irish Americans, and they were sort of imitating kind of like, you know, jazz musicians that they were listening to at the time. And then it kind of turned into rhythm and blues. So, everyone knows it. It's sort of in the fabric of American culture. It's like Elvis. It's like Sinatra. Everyone knows doo-wop, you know. It's like five-part harmony. There's always a bass, like do, 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 do. I'm not the bass. I don't do that in the group.
Anytime I need bass, I turn to my son. He's got a much deeper voice than me. But all right, so it's November 14th. Have you been out to Tuyacon, Dominic?
You know what? I saw a friend perform there in Aladdin many years ago, and I couldn't believe it. The size of the stage, the production values, it's really a special place.
The Red Rocks at Tuyacon. I mean, it just, every time I go out to Tuyacon and watch a show or a concert, I'm just blown away just being kind of tucked, nestled in amongst those giant red cliffs. And I think doo-wop is echoing off of those red rocks is going to be something special.
Oh, you better believe it will be, for sure. Yeah. And I know they just did Jersey Boys there, so everyone's like excited to hear more Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons tunes.
Do you know how the Doo-Wop Project came to be? How did you guys decide to, let's make a little concert event out of this thing?
Oh, well, I was in the original cast of Jersey Boys on Broadway. And so a couple of my other castmates and I, we thought, wow, there's nobody our age singing this music. We should form a band. We really enjoy it. And we want to be kind of like the ambassadors to this great music because it is sort of dying out. And so we thought, I wonder if there's a market for this. And it just began slowly. We did like 10 gigs the first year, and then 4 years later, we were doing like 60. So there is a market, it appears, for doo-wop in this great country of ours.
I was going to say 60 in a year. That's at least one a week, once or twice a week. So you guys are really busy.
We keep busy. Yeah, it kind of comes in clumps, you know, and we're weekend warriors. So we all live in Manhattan. Actually, I live in Brooklyn, but we just kind of travel out of there. So it's been a big blessing, and we love doing it.
I always wondered about this kind of thing. So you're a singer, obviously. What happens if the show is about to go on and you realize, man, I got a sore throat, or I don't have it tonight. My voice is not there for me. What do you do?
Well, that's where our Broadway training comes in. We're conditioned. Like, when you do 8 shows a week for years, like, your voice becomes very resilient. And so, like, if you have a hardcore cold, like, you're not making the trip. We have subs. We call other guys that have worked with us before on Broadway. They come in and take our place. Mm. But I can't even remember that actually happening. You know, if I'm feeling under, you won't probably know because I'm a professional and I'll take some DayQuil and pop a lozenge and we'll get out there and do the show.
Nice. That's awesome. Yeah. You got to do it, right? I mean, what if somebody once said, never let the audience see you bleed, right?
Yes, sir.
You just got to get her done. Dominic Nolfi with the Doo-Wop Project. Tell us again about the concert and what to expect.
It's high energy, polished show. We're five Broadway performers backed by a 4-piece band of Broadway musicians. There's some dope saxophone solos.
Love that, yeah.
And it's really fun for the whole family. Grandma can come, mom can come, you can bring your young kids too, because it's Americana music, and we're funny too. We tell some jokes, and we have a great time.
And by the way, tickets start at $20. Again, it's November 14th at 7 o'clock at Tuacon Outdoor Amphitheater. Dominic, thanks for coming on and telling us about it.
Thank you so much for having me. Have a great day.
All right, we'll see you later. Dominic Nolfi with the Doo-Wop Project on November the 14th at 7 o'clock. I want to go. I got to see if I can arrange to get to that thing. Mello, how are you? You doing okay?
I'm fantastic. How are you?
Yeah, what'd you think of Dominic? Young guy keeping the old school music alive. I love that.
I love it. I love to go and listen to live music, and especially tight harmonies. I really love those.
One of my favorite bands of all time is Chicago. And the reason I love Chicago, two things. They have a horn section and they have tight harmonies mm-hmm. in their music. Those two things are very important to me. That really makes a band. So
yeah, I love harmonies.
Nice. Anyway, yeah, $20 though. You can get, you know, and then they have more expensive seats if you want to sit on the front row or whatever. Those are a little bit more, but $20 is not bad at all mm-hmm. for that kind of thing. So very cool. All right, let's change tack a little bit. First of all, an update yesterday on somebody had called and asked about, you know, those murders in Enoch, the murder suicide, and it was a terrible, gruesome thing. Mm-hmm. Did we decide seven people died, or was it if
it
we
was
count
eight.
The it was eight counting
it
the guy
eight.
That did it? Okay,
yeah.
So he killed his wife, five kids, and his mother-in-law, and then he killed himself. Imagine what that house must have been like, Mello.
Yeah, I don't know where the murders took place at the property.
Well, I remember reading the story, and he went throughout the house, and I mean, you know, the kids hit a couple of the kids hit in the bathroom when the mm-hmm. other kids were sleeping, or you know, so I mean, he
hunted them down.
It was gruesome in this house. Yeah,
yeah, that's terrible. But I did find the house. I'm not going to say the address or who bought it or anything, but it did sell in November of 2023.
So the murders happened in June,
mm-hmm.
was it?
I believe
last
so.
Year, not this year, but last
2023.
Year. And then the house sold 5 months later.
Yes.
Did it sell, in your opinion, was it market value? Did it sell for pretty much full price?
You know what? It sold within 3 days, so it may have been discounted. I didn't do a valuation on it. I just found the information, I don't know.
It was $500,000-something?
It was close. It was over $550,000.
And do you remember how big this house is? Was it pretty big?
It was a large house. It was on 0.41 acres.
Okay,
it was pretty good size.
It was probably
house.
Worth six or seven, and they sold it for $550.
But it's in Enoch too, so it's not in St. George, so it could be closer to valuation. Maybe like $50,000 less. But I honestly didn't do a valuation. I just found where it was at, and I used it using all information that you can find at home.
She did it legally.
I did it legally. Yes.
Mello, could you live in that house?
No.
No?
No.
Knowing what happened there, you couldn't.
No.
You couldn't.
No. Because I think when something like that happens in there, some of the, I know I'm a little woo-woo, but I think like some of the energy gets trapped in there.
Woo-woo.
Yeah. I don't want that energy bouncing around next to me I don't think I could, honestly. So yeah. I'd be better not to know. But then if you know, is the energy still there? I don't know. It's like if the tree falls and nobody hears it, does it really fall? I don't know. Yeah. I don't know.
I think whoever bought it, and we have a name, but we're not going to disclose that. But whoever bought it, I don't know if they're an investor or if they're going to live there or what. But they've got to eventually, even if they don't know, they're going to find out. Right.
Yeah,
I mean, if you move into a neighborhood and you talk to the neighbors at all, you're going to find out. that, yeah. that what happened in that house. And so, you know, humans are funny. I'm a little, you know what? I don't think you're that strange not wanting to live in a house where murders occurred. I think 99% of us would go, yeah, that's a little sus, as the kids say, suspect, mm-hmm. a little suspicious, I don't feel good about being in this place.
Yeah, and I have walked into homes, and literally I went, and I was showing property in Cedar City, and I went into this home, and it was an older home, and right when you walked in, you could feel, like it hit you,
there's
something off, mm-hmm. and even my clients are like, I don't feel so good here. I'm like, I don't feel so good either, but I have to find out, so I'm going to go in the basement. So I walked around in the basement.
By yourself?
Yes.
Ooh.
And I felt worse. I was like, oh my gosh, get me out. And I was like shaking it off of me when I got out. I'm like, okay, that's not the house for you guys. It was really terrible. But you can feel that there was something off, and you can just kind of know.
I think I've told you the story before, but I'm going to tell it again. So Jeremy Larkin is a realtor here in town. During 2008, we all know what happened, the housing, you know, market collapsed, and there was all kinds of foreclosures and craziness going on. Before that, there had been, you know, you basically could wink at a banker and they'd give you a loan for anything, you know.
Wink.
I mean, it was crazy. They were giving loans to anybody for anything. And mm-hmm. anyway, so it was his job when a house was foreclosed on to go and inspect the home and get it ready for resale. And he told me one time he went to a house and he couldn't get in. The doors were all locked up. And so, but he had a code to the garage. So he opened the garage, and in the middle of this empty house, empty garage, was a big pile of wigs.
No.
And he's like, okay, that's really strange. I we're talking dozens of them. And so he's like, okay, this is a little creepy, but you know, whatever, maybe somebody had a wig business and they threw them. I don't know. So then he goes into the kitchen and he walks into the kitchen and there is what looks like blood all over the floor and emanating from the refrigerator.
No.
A huge pile of this reddish liquid. And he's like, okay, I was creeped out a little by the wigs. I'm creeped out a lot now by the blood on the kitchen floor. So he plowed through his feelings. He like put them aside. He's like, I gotta find out what's going on. And he was able to find out when he opened the fridge, the power had been turned off because the house had been vacant for mm-hmm. some time and been foreclosed on. In the fridge was some meat that had thawed out and then leached the meat juice all over the floor. And he said that explains the meat. He said he still cannot explain why there was a large pile of wigs in the middle of the garage.
Yeah, you never know. And when the power's out and there's no lights, it's a lot more creepy walking through those homes.
And the other thing, too, is he said it smelled like death, which was just the meat rotting. But yeah,
right. And then there's no air, so then it's super hot and stenchy. It can get pretty gross. Being a realtor is not easy.
Years ago, I took my, I had a Ford Mustang convertible. I still have it, but it used to be my daily driver. And I remember one time going and getting groceries, and I had bought a whole bunch of groceries, but I had other stuff in my trunk, some blankets and an extra sweatshirt and, you know, just stuff you keep in your trunk, first aid kit. So anyway, I took all the groceries in. I went back out to the trunk to make sure it was empty. It looked like it was empty to me. And so I just closed the trunk. Now, this was in St. George summer, a few summers ago. And I shut the trunk and I went into the house. And the next day, I got in my Mustang and it kind of smelled a little funny. But, you know, I don't know. I didn't think much about it. And, you know, maybe it wasn't the car. Maybe it was something in the garage. Maybe it was something outside, whatever. Drove it to work. It sat out in the 110 St. George all day long. Got back in the car at the end of work, and it smelled even funnier. And I'm like, okay, this is weird. So I drove it home with the windows down. Actually, I think I had the top down so I could get rid of it. I got home, and I'm like, something just isn't right here. Something smells wrong. So I opened the trunk, and the smell just about smacked me in the face. You know, it's just this overwhelming smell of, well, it smelled like death. But So I'm like, okay, I'm going to plug my nose and figure out what's happened here. And I dug through the piles. There were, you know, like a sweatshirt and a blanket. And there was a, I had bought a roll, you know, that the ground sausage that comes in the rolls.
Yeah.
I had bought a pound of ground sausage to go in a dish I was going to make. And I had left it in the trunk and it was ripe. Oh, yep. Man.
You only do that once.
Yeah. No, that'll never happen again. So. Anyway, but it spent, I think it was 2 full days out in the St. George heat.
Oh, that's so nasty.
Yeah.
Yep.
It was not.
Done stuff like that before, for sure.
All right, we're going to talk a little bit about garbage here in a minute. Yes, garbage. And I did want to talk about, so in Florida, this kid got arrested. He had committed a murder. So, and I say kid, he was 18. But they had, when they arrested this guy, they found in his house some drawings and markings of what they believe were going to be future murder victims. So the murder he got arrested for, he actually, an older gentleman, and I say older, he's about my age, he's like 60. So, but he had gone in and attacked this older gentleman and murdered him. Sad story, but... they were able to, through detective work, the surveillance cameras around the neighborhood, they had determined that he had gone to this house. Anyway, they figured out it was him and arrested him. When they arrested him, they again searched his house and found all these plans of what looked like a map of future victims that he was going to kill. And then when they released his picture to the public, a lady came forward and said, so the other day, the day before he got arrested, this person came to my house and they were banging on my door and I had the deadbolt and they're banging on my door and then they were going around the house looking in the windows and this person had a hammer on them. And, she said, I was scared to death. I called police, and I screamed at him that I had called the police and he ended up leaving when I told him the police were on their way. But the lady believes that he was there to murder her. And they said, well, what relationship do you have? Does he mow your lawn? Do you know this guy? Do you work with him? Have you ever met him? She said, no, I have no relation to him whatsoever. And they're finding that this guy had planned on killing. They believe he had planned. She was on that little map there.
Oh, no.
And they think that he had planned on murdering her next, but couldn't get in the house.
Jeez.
When he knocked, she didn't answer. She, you know, she kept the deadbolt closed. And but it brings to light an interesting deal. The authorities want to charge him for attempted murder in that case, and they want to charge him for, you know, I don't know the name of the law, but they want to charge him for potential other murders that he would have committed. They're saying that he was a potential serial killer. Because he had no relation to the victims. He was just randomly picking people and was going to murder them. And so I got to thinking, well, can you... It's like there was a movie. I forget the name of the movie.
I know what you're talking about, yes.
Where they predicted that people would commit a murder.
They would
arrest him before they committed the murder. And I got to thinking about that. I'm like, I don't feel comfortable with that. Because, I mean, I might be in jail right now. There were a couple times I wanted to murder someone. Now, I didn't do it.
Right, but did you write it in your journal?
No, I didn't write it down.
I think I have.
Oh, you did? Ooh.
Not that I'm going to kill somebody, but I'm really mad.
I know there have been a couple of times in traffic where I've seen people do something so stupid that I'm like, I should run them off the road. I've never done that.
No.
Immaturity, you know,
no.
I mean, you don't do that kind of thing, right? But at the same time, you know, I don't think we can charge people for things they haven't done.
I know, but if he actually went to her house, now, I think they can get her for that
one. That one's different. Yeah, I agree. Especially if he was banging on the door and he had a hammer and he was threatening her, although she said he didn't really say anything. But, I mean, holding a hammer. By the way, that hammer was the same hammer that was used in the murder of the other guy.
Oh, my goodness. So it was a murder weapon.
Yeah, it was the murder weapon.
Don't they do that when the kids... Or the people that have gone and done the school shootings and they have their, like, vendettas or their lists, haven't they used those against them, even if they've caught them before they've done it?
I don't know.
I think they have.
Interesting. I just, like I said, I think we tread on very thin ice when we start charging people for things that they were going to do in the future. Right?
Well, he did commit murder, so at least he'll be locked away forever, hopefully, and not have another chance.
I think about that. Now, this is different, and people are going to say, come on, Andy. No, but remember the guy in Pennsylvania that shot Trump in the ear?
Mm-hmm.
And the Secret Service did not take the shot before he shot. They killed him. Shot and killed him after he took the shot.
Yeah.
And then you go, okay, should the Secret Service have shot and killed that guy before he took the shot? Well, in this case, absolutely, because mm-hmm. he had a gun and he was aiming it at the former president.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if I go to an event and I get arrested for something I might do, that to me is a little bit... You know, then we start, like I said, treading on thin ice. It's a little bit scary to me.
I don't know. I think that I want those threats stopped.
Okay. But at what point do you say, okay, I agree with you, we should stop imminent threats. But what that word then, okay, how imminent is imminent? Of course, a guy pointing a rifle at Donald Trump, that's an imminent threat, and he should mm-hmm. have been stopped before it happened. But what if he had a pistol and was standing in the crowd?
Right. What if someone's casually walking around with a machete? Should we just wait? I don't know.
Yeah, it's not against the law to carry a machete.
I know, but there's a lot of people I would not like to have carry a machete around me.
I agree with you. I agree with you, but I don't know. That's a weird little gray area.
That is a gray area. I like that.
So, all right, we do have to get a weather break in here. Again, I wanted to mention we're going to talk about garbage in a little while and editing. Wait, garbage and editing? What? Yeah. So I'm going to tell a story about editing and garbage. When we come back after the break, it has to do with, so people published a transcript. In my case, I had published a story and then unauthorized someone went through and changed it. And I can tell you as a transcriber, I don't know because I have never been a transcriber, but as a writer, if someone goes in and changes my story and makes it wrong, ooh, that makes me so mad.
Right.
So mad. So we'll talk about that.
They're editing the garbage.
Yeah. When we come back right now, let's check in. Actually, first, before we go to weather, I do want to talk about Heartlight Funeral Services. So have you heard of Heartlight Funeral Services? Heartlight Funeral Services is kind of a different take on end-of-life services. Now, they are a full-service mortuary. They've got embalming, of course. They've got the caskets. They've got everything that you need for a funeral. The only thing they don't have is a chapel, which most people do their chapel. If they do have a ceremony, they have it at their church. But if you go into their... You know, you're used to going to a funeral home and it's kind of dark and depressing, got the dark paneling and the expensive furniture and, you know, everybody's sad. And I don't know. To me, I'm like, can't we have a different take on the end of life? And Heartlight Funeral Services is exactly that. They like to say they're about life celebrated. I love that. And basically, you go in there. It's a bright white space. They have a huge 24-foot white wall where they can project, play a video celebrating your loved one's life. It's incredible. They have big screen TVs and recliners and the best prices in town as well. It's all there at Heartlight Funeral Services. They're located at 504 West Buena Vista Boulevard. I always tell people, go check out their website. It's really awesome. It's Heartlight FS. For funeral services, heartlightfs.com. I believe that these guys have the right take. You know, I had a brother-in-law that died, and he was a big barbecue guy, big smoker, and loved barbecuing meat. And so to celebrate his life, instead of having this big old sad, sobbing funeral, he had told my sister-in-law, he had said, have everybody bring their favorite ribs. Have everybody smoke some ribs and bring them to my celebration of my life. I'm like, yeah, that's what it should be all about. I told my wife, too. If I die, tell everybody to bring barbecue. Okay, that's what we want. That's what Heartlight Funeral Services is about. Again, it is life celebrated with Heartlight Funeral Services. They're located at 504 West Buena Vista Boulevard. 504 West Buena Vista Boulevard. Heartlight Funeral Services is... AG approved.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk Leader.
Welcome back. I'm Andy, 935 on KDXU. Mello is with me today, as always on a Friday. Hi, Mello.
Good morning.
We're lucky we have a bonus Mello this week. She was on yesterday with me as well. And maybe Monday. Depends on how things work out on Monday. Mm-hmm. But, because it's election week next week, we have a, normally the first week of the month, we have Dr. Blodgett on Wednesday, Marianne Hamilton on Tuesday, and the mayor of St. George on Thursday. We are still, Mayor Randall will still be on Thursday, but on Tuesday and Wednesday, we'll be doing special election coverage. In fact, Jimmy Kesson is going to be with me on Monday. Dr. Blodgett, I move from Wednesday to Monday next week in advance of the election so that we can do election coverage on Tuesday and Wednesday next week. So, yeah, a little bit of a change, a little, little different.
I'm hoping there's a change for the election. I am hoping.
Oh, yeah. A big one. A very big one. All right. Years ago, so I would put this at about, maybe 2000. Mm-hmm. So 20 something years ago, which to me, 2000 seems like it was just a couple of years ago, but apparently it was a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And I'm getting old. My job was doing games on the radio, but I also had my little side hustle, as the kids like to say, was I would write for the Salt Lake Tribune. I would cover sporting events for the Salt Lake Tribune. And it was nice because they would pay me about once a week, sometimes more often, to write a story for them. And, you know, it was like 50 to 75 bucks a story, which doesn't sound like a lot now, but actually 25 years ago, that wasn't bad, you know. And usually I was already doing whatever event it was on the radio. So for me, it was just, you know, do a couple of interviews, write a story afterwards. So it was a nice little side gig. So one year I'm out at the junior college basketball championships, and I don't remember if it was the year Dixie won or if it was one of the other years they went out there but didn't win. But one of the things I've always postulated, I've always had this theory that if you turn a story in early in the day, editors have all day to tinker with it.
Oh.
And fool around with it. That's not a good thing. And if you turn it in close to deadline, they'll scan it for typos and they'll publish it. It's just boom, it's out there. So, Dixie College was playing in this tournament. They happened to have a game that was early in the day. It was like noon or 1 o'clock. We're talking basketball here. And so, we did the game on the radio. After the game, I did a couple of interviews and I submitted my story to the Salt Lake Tribune. I knew submitting a story at, you know, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, that the editor was going to come into work, usually 4 o'clock or so, and he'd have all evening to tinker with my story before he hit published. And I was a little apprehensive about that.
Mm-hmm.
So I just said, hey, you know, this game is complete and here's the story. And, you know, if you have any questions, please, please, please call me. So, that night, back then they had, so Tribune was still in print. I don't know if Tribune still does a print version or not, but, they kind of had a moratorium on the stories. They would not publish them on their website until they had gone to print for their newspaper because they didn't want to scoop themselves. Mm. So my story, even though the game was early in the day, was not going to be published to their website until around, you know, probably 11 o'clock or midnight. So I stayed up because I wanted to, you know, I just wanted to make sure my story was good and it was published. And it came out about 11:30 at night, and the dude had changed just about everything fact-wise in the story. It was wrong.
No way.
He had the wrong guy scoring at the wrong time. I was so mad. I was livid because my story, the one I wrote, was very accurate. The one he published was very inaccurate. So, but people don't go, they don't look at it and see the wrong stuff and go, oh, the editor fooled with it. They look at it and go, boy, this guy that wrote this story is stupid.
That's right.
Because his facts are all wrong.
It's still your name on it?
Oh, yeah. My name was all, I was mad. I was so mad. In fact, I called the next day, I called and talked to the editor. And I said,
after you'd calmed down or before?
After.
Okay.
And I called and I said, hey, you guys changed my story, and it's all the things that you changed in it are incorrect. One of them was the spelling of a kid's name. A couple of them were, you know, facts about the game, who scored when, and you know, kind of the recap of what was happening. Mm-hmm. I said, you changed, so it's all wrong. And they're like, oh, okay, well, we're sorry about that. We'll watch it next time. We'll watch it next time. And so I was just like, right. I cannot abide this. This made me very, very uncomfortable and unhappy. And so I had pretty much at that point said, you know what, that's it, I'm done. I finished because I'd made a commitment. I finished writing the story for the stories for the rest of the week that Dixie College was out at the national tournament. But I vowed at that moment not to write a story ever again for the Salt Lake Tribune. I was like, that's it, I'm done. So I finished that week out doing what I was supposed to do, but I told them next time they called and wanted me to cover something, I'm like, no, I'm good. Thanks anyway. And they actually, at one point, after I told them no two or three times, they actually, one of the editors called me and said, hey, we really value your writing. Why do you keep saying no? And I said, mm-hmm. Well, because I submitted a story and you guys butchered it and made it wrong and made me look bad. And all I got was, oh, sorry about that. We won't do it again. And that, to me, that wasn't good enough. That, you know, I mean, I wanted a real apology from a real boss. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so how does this relate to garbage? Okay. If you'll remember, so this whole controversy about garbage started with the Donald Trump campaign when they had a comedian warm up the crowd and made the joke. He said, hey, did you know there's a whole floating island of garbage out in the Atlantic Ocean? Yeah, it's called Puerto Rico.
Oh.
Yeah, it should not have said that. And so immediately after he said it, Donald Trump and some of the other people were like, yeah, we don't know why this guy made that. We don't feel that way. That's not, he should not have said that, et cetera, et cetera. Well, anyway, so one of the reporters asked Joe Biden, our current president, what do you think about that comment that the comedian made at a Trump rally about Puerto Rico being garbage?
Mm.
Well, Biden said something to the effect of, well, all of Trump's supporters are garbage.
Oh, no.
Or, no, he said Trump's supporters are garbage, is what he said. So the White House, you know, everything a president says is recorded. They have transcribers, they have people, stenographers, whatever, writing down, basically typing in everything that the president says in public. So when they released this out to the public, it was word for word exactly what he said. Trump supporters are garbage. And then somebody, we don't know who exactly, but one of the Biden people went to the official transcript and went into the word supporters and put an apostrophe after the R before the S. So it said Trump supporters, possessive, garbage, referring, basically making it about that one guy. Instead of what he really said, which all Trump supporters are garbage. And anyway, the stenographers are livid. They're like, that is not what he said. That is not how he said it. And we don't appreciate you political people going in and changing what we just typed.
Yeah.
So, I've been an editor my whole life, too. And there have been times where I've had to change a writer's words or story. But what you don't do is change content. Mm-hmm. Don't change meaning.
The meaning, right.
Yeah, that's a no-no. So anyway, the stenographers are livid about garbage. And yes, we do have a phone call. Okay. I had to finish my story, though, Melanie.
No, you're good. I'm just like on the next thing right now.
Okay. Let's go right to the phone line then. I think, is it Doug?
No, it's just caller, just anonymous caller.
Anonymous.
Yeah.
Oh, hi, Anonymous. How are you? Are you there, Anonymous? Yes, there he is. Okay.
Yes.
I've had all kinds of button issues today, so but sorry about that. What's up?
Hey, just a reference, kind of with your news reporting, how they'd go in and change your story. Now we're getting real close to the election, and they say there's been a lot more of the mail-in ballots, you know, the early voting with the mail-in ballots, which is good.
Yeah.
But I've got some concerns with the whole thing, with the election and the ballots and the counting, et cetera, just like last time that happened. So it's what's to say that these early ballots, just like they changed your story when you put that story in early about the sports event, and then mm-hmm. they went in and changed things. Who's watching these people that get in the early ballots, say the Democrats in the blue states, swing states, that are responsible to put them in the machines or whatever they do, that they're not fudging it like I feel that they did last time.
Yeah.
And it's just, this. Oh gosh, Andy, I unfortunately I feel I've been telling people I know this and that for, you know, the last few years that, you know, it worked for them last time what they did, and they're going to hook or crook, they'll do whatever they need to do it again this time. And I feel the big red flag will be by midnight, 2, 3 a.m. The polls have closed. These states didn't have an exact count because they're behind the scenes all night long doing their shenanigans with the vote.
I have Jimmy Kessler on occasionally. In fact, Jimmy's going to join me on Tuesday here on the program. But Jimmy likes to use the word, we have to beat the margin of cheat, is what he says. He said, we have to win on the Republican side by so much that even if they do cheat, that it's not going to be enough. And I don't know if we're going to do that. I'm with you on this. I'm a little scared.
Yes, I hear what you're saying. And is that fair? Is it fair that we have to win by that much?
No, it's not.
Get the popular vote. Well, I guess we'll let you have it. You got the popular vote. You know, and it's just, it's really very unfortunate. I feel I'm not one of them, but I guess if I was a Democrat, what I'd be justifying in my mind is, yeah, I know I cheated. I know we cheated here and there, but we won. So the ends justify the means. You know, we're saving the country from Trump. You know, just all the excuses they'd tell themselves. It's just really unfortunate.
You know, I watched a show last night, and this reminded me of that. So this guy had these people killed, murder for hire scheme. The people that he had killed were blackmailing him. And in the guy's mind, in his warped mind, he's like, they deserve to die because they were blackmailing me. And that's kind of the same thing, right? Well, Trump is so evil, it's okay if we cheat a little bit to keep him out. I think that's their thinking. I think that's their mindset.
Oh, yeah, for sure. They wouldn't even, I've said some friends that the Democrats would, the politicians would steal a popsicle from a baby in a stroller if they felt that they needed to do that to make a gain on something. You know, it's just, they're very, that word crooked is a nice way of putting it, but they definitely have the Trump derangement syndrome, and I feel they all need therapy. It's just, they've lost their minds.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you on that one. All right. Thanks for the call today.
Anyway, thanks, Andy.
All right. See you later. 9:48 on KDXU. Do the end must justify the means in some cases?
Not in ethics. I don't believe so.
And not hardly in anything ever, unless, I mean, then you go back to the whole question. Well, if you could kill baby Hitler before he killed 6 million Jews, would you do it? Would you know? Yeah, I guess. I don't know.
It's all about the free will, right? Everybody gets their choices. And
the problem is that one person's evil. The Democrats think Donald Trump is evil. And one person's evil is another person's not evil, you know? And I personally think the Democratic Party is led by a lot of people who are kind of evil. All they care about is money and themselves, so... You know, it's a perspective thing. If they think Trump's evil, I think they're evil. Well, who's really evil here?
Right. But a lot of good comes from evil, too, because then people can turn to a, you know, higher source and have the blessings that come from things that are bad.
Oh, listen to you. So, all right.
I know. I'm postulating.
Sunday school lesson.
I'm postulating.
Yeah.
I learned that word again today. I haven't heard that for a long time until today. Increase your vocabulary with Andy.
We got to pay some bills. We'll be right back.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Welcome back, 952 on KDXU. I'm Andy. Thanks for tuning in today. Mello is here as well on our Friday. Hi, Mello.
Good morning.
So how safe do you feel in as a resident of the state of Utah? You've lived in other states. You've been around.
I have.
Have you ever lived in a big city, like really big, like New York, Philadelphia, Detroit, Boston? No?
I lived in San Antonio.
That's kind of big,
That's kind of a big city. Kinda that big. Felt pretty big, but I didn't. I had three little kids, and I didn't do much except for stay home and take care of kids.
Well, it's a full-time job.
Yeah.
For sure. So Utah comes in number five when it comes to the safest states. This is a ranking by Wallet Hub that took into account 38 different factors. And I, obviously, we don't have time to go through mm-hmm. all 38, but here is a sampling of some of the factors that see keeping crime rates low, maintaining safe roadways, strong economies, high levels of occupational safety, disaster preparedness, propensity to have a disaster. Utah came in pretty good. Vermont was number one. In fact, it's us in New England, basically. Vermont, New Hampshire, Maine, Massachusetts, and then Utah.
Wow.
Are the top five safest states. So that's really cool.
And it makes me feel kind of hoity-toity, like, ooh, we're like up with like
yeah, all the,
New
all
Englanders.
All the rich New Englanders with their leaves turning and Harvard and all that.
That's
anyway.
Right.
So I'm feeling good about that, right? I'm mm-hmm. like, okay, I can walk down the streets of almost anywhere in Utah, almost, and feel safe. Like, nobody's going to jump me. I'm not going to get mugged. I'm not going to get, you know, shot at or anything like that. But then almost the same time the story came out, and this story came out yesterday, almost exactly the same time the story came out, the news broke about this two more fatalities on the roads yesterday.
Mm.
No, one yesterday, two the day before yesterday. And that makes over 200 now in the state of Utah in 200 and, I don't know, something days. It's actually staggering how many deaths on the roads this year in the state of Utah. And so, you know, the good news, yeah, we're a safe state. Crime is low. Occupational safety, you know, we're not likely to have natural disasters. Like, obviously, we're not going to get a hurricane. You don't see tornadoes in Utah too often. But it seems like this year has been a deadly year driving.
Maybe we're just bad drivers because we're so aggressive.
I don't know.
Or we're old.
Well, if you look at them, there's for every fatality on the road this year, over 200 of them in Utah, there's 200 different reasons why they happened.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the most common one is speed.
Mm-hmm.
And this one that happened in Tokerville just the night before last was a guy going too fast, didn't handle a turn. Now, he was being chased by police. And then you start getting into the why was he being chased and how close were they and should they have stopped the pursuit?
Mm.
And I don't know the answer to those questions. I really don't. According to the stories online, from the Wire, it said police had lost sight of the suspect, which implies to me either, number one, he outran them, or number two, they let him go knowing they could get him later.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when he crashed because he was going 100 miles an hour. He hit Tokerville and didn't make the turn and rolled his car and he was not belted in. I don't know if you heard about this story. So he robbed Lynn's. He took something from Lynn's.
Oh, no.
And that's when they called police on him, and he jumped in his car and took off. So, you know, mm-hmm. somebody commented online, yeah, he probably, you know, maybe stole $10 worth of something, and now mm-hmm. he paid for it with his life.
That's
but
sad.
It is sad. But you could say, okay, speed was a factor now, and it absolutely was, but why was he speeding? So is crime a factor in it? The fact that he, you know, committed a crime?
Mm-hmm.
I know that, I mean, you talk about committing a crime. DUIs are one of the leading causes of deaths on the road in Utah. That's committing a crime if you're mm-hmm. driving while under the influence, certainly. Speeding technically is committing a crime.
Right,
you know?
Texting while driving,
drowsy
driving.
Yeah, so... I just, as those two stories came out almost at exactly the same time, I'm just like, isn't that ironic that yeah. we are deemed one of the safest states in America, and yet there's another death. There's another death. There are three of them in the last 24 hours or
right.
36 hours.
There was the guy that ran the light and got hit by the garbage truck in Washington City.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's
terrible.
That was 2 days in a row that someone died in Washington County on the roads, just in our little county. I mean, statewide, we're averaging about one a day this year. And in Washington County, we had one a day for the last 2 days. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I don't want to speculate on the causes of, like, the Mini Cooper guy that went through a stop sign that mm-hmm. the Washington City put out a press release saying that they believe that he went through a stop sign, but they don't know why.
Right.
If he's from that area, which I believe he is, a local guy, he would have known about a stop sign. So
yeah.
maybe he was having a medical incident or mm-hmm. maybe he did it on purpose. I don't know.
Right.
I really don't
know. I do run stop signs on occasion.
What?
I do. I don't run them. I do California stops.
Okay. That's a little different than running them.
Yeah.
Running them means ignoring them completely.
I don't ignore them completely.
Yeah. No, don't do that.
No. I haven't done that since I was 16.
I got pulled over once in 1986. I was a missionary in Pennsylvania. And they always told me, if you ever get pulled over when you're a missionary, just tell them that you're a missionary and that you're on, you know, you're out there preaching the good word and the cops will let you off. So I got pulled over. This was in rural Pennsylvania for a California stop. It was, you know, I went, kind of rolled through a stop sign very slowly, but didn't stop completely. And when he pulled us over, I said, I am so sorry, officer. I'm a missionary. And he's like, are you one of them Mormons?
Oh, no.
I was like, I'm a missionary for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. He goes, I hate Mormons.
No.
And he wrote me a ticket. Yeah.
I got pulled over for running a stop sign, I thought, because I was racing my brother home from work, and I was 16, and I wanted to get back first. So I used to turn off my lights when I'd get to the four-way stop, because it was like 11 o'clock, and if I saw no headlights, I'd just barrel through. And so I got pulled over, and the cop says, do you know why I pulled you over? I'm like, because I didn't stop at the stop sign. He's like, I didn't see that. I'm like, oh! So he
got a confession for something he didn't even know about.
I know, it was so funny. So he gave me a ticket for speeding, but said, since I didn't see you run the stop sign, I won't give you a ticket for that. I'm like, thank you, I guess.
A reminder to everyone as we wrap up the show, voting time is now. You got your ballot. If you want to vote in person, you can wait, I guess, till November 5th. But I would encourage you to go ahead and get your vote done. I got mine in, and my wife dropped them in the drop box on the way to work yesterday morning. And your vote really does matter. Even in Utah, little things like governor and things like that, your vote matters. And we want to send a resounding message to the liberal left that we are way, way behind President Donald Trump, former President Trump. We want him to be our president again. So, yeah, vote. Did you vote yet?
I'm going to.
Go vote. Vote today. All right. Thanks, Mello. Great to talk to you today. Everybody have a great weekend.